This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And you can see I'm feeling sprightly. I've had an international break. That's really strange, this Premier League business. You don't actually play any football in the Premier League. We just got going and said, hold on a second, it's time for a holiday. So we've gone on holiday. The players have gone on holiday. I think the fair, everyone's gone on holiday. But now we're back. Because we've got a few more matches to play, because we need to survive in this Premier League. And I'll tell you something, it is so hot outside. We were going to go to the pub, we're going to go down the Globe and have a few beers and record, but we just thought it's so hot, and I was cream crackered, as they say, knackered. So we've decided to return to our place, the virtual joint, and we're going to hang out here. My name's Billy Grant, and I'm here with the Laney man. Laney, how are you?
Yeah, very good, Bill. Very good. Been odd not having football over the last week or so. I know there's been international stuff, but just got back into the flow of watching the Bees and really getting excited about how the Premiership season started, and then for it to kind of stop abruptly. But looking forward to Brighton at the weekend and then the next run of results. So bring it on, Bill.
Bring it on. We've got GP in the house. Gary Paul, his first podcast of the season. How's it feel, GP?
Yeah, well, as I said, I've dusted the old cobwebs off, mate, and I'm back in the saddle again.
That's good. Actually, glad to see you riding the good ship Brentford, as they say. So listen, let's just crack straight on, because we actually, if you remember, God, it goes to show you, it's so long ago, it seems like, but we finished that season off, like I said to you, we had a game up at Aston Villa, which is a great day out. Great day at Aston Villa, 1-1 draw, which we might talk about a little bit later in talking about the Brighton game as well. But after that came deadline day, and we had deadline day where we were trying to work out, I think in a podcast that we did the Post Villa podcast, we were trying to work out exactly what we thought we might have needed to have completed our squad, and things didn't quite go according to plan, did they, Laney?
Well, we actually thought we were going to do like a transfer deadline day special podcast, but it's a good job we didn't, because we would have had pretty much nothing to talk about. It was one of the quietest deadline days I can remember. The only kind of anything of note that happened was Halil Dervisoglu went to Turkey on a season-long loan. He went back to Galatasaray. There was talk of him going to Fenerbahce. So there was a few clubs in for Halil. So, obviously, we'd spoken about how well he'd played in the couple of games that we'd seen him, the friendly, the last friendly at New Griffin Park, and then obviously the Forest Green Rovers match. And I think, you know, I'm a bit sad to see him go, if I'm honest with you, because I think he is a good player to have on the bench to come on. He looked a classy player in the sort of the limited opportunities that we'd seen him this season. He scored for Turkey, I believe, at the weekend. So yeah, he's a star rising. But apart from that, we were, I think, word on the street was expecting a right back, Bill, and that didn't happen. And there's a bit of chatter about whether we're equipped, we've got enough cover there. A lot of people think we are. I'm probably in that camp, but I was expecting probably a kind of like an experienced Dalsgaard-esque specialist in that area to come in just to make sure that we had all bases covered. Were you surprised, Bill?
I was a little bit surprised because, like I said, it was a position that we needed. But then, at the other hand, you know, I mean, we know Canos has come in, he's played in that position, and we know, yes, he's not a right back, and there's been situations where he's been exposed as such. But also, he's actually played very well, and he's done some things that are very good. And I think that, you know, I think we're probably in the position where maybe if you compare it to maybe last season when you had Rico Henry and then you were looking for a substitute, if you had to have a long-term substitute for Rico Henry, and we had Mads Beck-Sorensen, who, listen, he's a great player, but, you know, everyone would say that they prefer Mads Beck playing in centre as opposed to playing at left-back. And he did a decent enough job at left-back as well. But I think that they and even I feel more comfortable with what we've got as right back and right back cover than what we did when we had left back cover, if that makes sense. We've got Roslev as well. We've got Canos as well, and we've also got Finn Stevens, who is like I said to you, came up from Worthing, and he's properly highly rated, a really really good player. Okay, still you're saying, do you want to throw him up against Premier League attackers? But you know, he's a good prospect, and if you're talking about a third place player in there, you know, maybe the club think, actually, you know, he's good enough if we need him for a period of time. So yes, I would have preferred to have got someone who is, you know, can do the job, but you know, sometimes these players come in and surprise
us,
don't they?
Just have to say, you know, there's a really good article on Besotted this week, and you know, it went through the options right back, and there's obviously, we shouldn't forget, we have got Tarik Fosu, who didn't go anywhere on deadline day. He has played in that position as cover, but he hasn't really ever let us down there. And if we were to change formation and play a four at the back, we've got Christopher Ayer, who has played in as a right back for Celtic. So, you know, we have got bodies there, but it's whether we have that kind of like international standard specialist. But maybe we'll be looking at that in January. I think we've got enough cover there to get us through the next couple of fixture rounds.
I think one of the players that we were looking for, and again, forgive me if I was wrong, because I haven't got my notes in front of me, but I think it might have been a Brazilian player, but again, I'm not 100% sure. I think that maybe we are targeting it for January. I think that may have to do with when the Brazilian season maybe starts and finishes. And also, we have to remember, work permits take a lot longer now to get, whether or not it's Q coming from Europe or if it's you coming from elsewhere. So we've actually having to get involved in trying to get these work permits, and we've never really done this before, and we're kind of getting into the flow of doing that, so things are taking a lot longer. But I have to admit, when I saw Phil Giles, when he talked about the window, he looked actually quite a little bit guided and probably a little bit frustrated. So I think that things that are meant to be coming in, you know, haven't come in, and I haven't sort of done the due diligence, as it is, to just check it out, because I went on total chill during this international window time. So I haven't really sort of kind of done a bit sniffing around, but like I said to you, I think that maybe we expected to get one or two things in more than we did, but we're still comfortable enough because, you know, we're doing all right. I think the only thing we just need to worry about is injuries. But talking about international window and international week, GP, I mean, there was a number of games out there internationally, because there's no league games unless you were looking at the lower leagues, as it is, which we're not part of at the moment now. GP, anything that took your fancy that you were checking out over the international break?
No, I mean, I looked to see, obviously, I saw that Pinnock, I don't think he played in the Mexico game.
No, so Jamaica played Mexico in their first match, and Pinnock didn't play, and neither did any of the English players play in that game, did they?
No, that's right, and as I said, I assume that's because Mexico must be red list. So, having seen it, I wasn't expecting to see Pinnock play against Panama in Jamaica, but yeah, he actually did, and they ended up losing. What was it, 3-0, I think they lost, so not the best result for them, but...
That's not, yeah, so Antonio played for that as well, you know, and sort of quite a few players were back for that game that didn't play for the Panama game, so I didn't expect to see Pinnock playing in that as well, so yeah, he's back in the fold at Jamaica, and I think they've probably forgiven him because the fans weren't happy that he didn't play in the Gold Cup over in America during the summer, because it clashed with our pre-season as well. Any other internationals? I mean, I've noticed that, like I said, Finn Stevens, and it just goes to show you, that kid. I mean, I watched Worthing in the summer. Great, played some great football. And surprisingly, they're not doing so well in the league, but it's still early days, actually. But Finn Stevens and Joe Adams played for Wales under-21s. They beat them 4-0. Okay. Joe Adams actually set up he got an assist, actually, which is great. Nice. But the rise of Finn Stevens from Worthing to playing for Wales under 21 in a very short space of time, I think, goes to show you what kind of talent that we've got there as well. And Mads Bidstrup as well, he played for Denmark under 21s. They had a 1-0 win over Kazakhstan. And Laney knows all about Kazakhstan, don't you, Laney?
Oh, yeah, this sounds like a dodgy story.
That's right. So we got that as well. And also, you know, what else do we have as well? We had, of course, Denmark. We always get the Denmark players.
Yeah, they played last night, didn't they? I think Christian came on late on, didn't he? And I don't think Jensen got a run out, so I'll not be funny. That does suit me.
Yeah, no, I was thinking exactly the same, GP. That how much it does suit us. You know, I watched the Denmark Faroe Islands game on Saturday, and Jensen and Norgaard featured heavily in that game. And you know, they both look good. Credit to the Faroe Islands, they pushed them all the way. They looked a decent team, actually. But they seem to be very much second string Denmark choice. Which I actually, as you just alluded to, I think it suits us, because they're not gonna. I don't think they're gonna be thrust into the sort of like the games that matter. I'm not saying they're not good enough for those. We know they are, but they there's a good chance of them coming back less burnt out, as it were. So you know, so again, that suits us.
I think you outdid me there, Laney, actually, because you talking about watching Denmark versus whoever it was. I was actually watching, what's it, Armenia versus Liechtenstein a little bit earlier, and I watched it from the very first minute. So I think these are the things that you do in the international window. GP?
Do you think there's somebody in our scouting team that's just sitting there thinking, I've got to sit there and watch this game? Well, are we versus Liechtenstein? See if we can pick up any gems.
Well, Glenn Hoddle was commentating on it, which I thought was really, really odd. It was on. My son had put it on, and I was like, "That's Glenn Hoddle. This is Armenia Liechtenstein. What the hell is he commentating on this? He doesn't need, you know."
I assume they're doing it from a studio, so maybe he's doing double duty. Yeah,
that's right. And also, obviously, like I said, international window, we've had a. Oh yeah, a couple of England games already. They played Hungary. I was meant to go to Hungary, actually. I was going to go there with my daughter, but obviously they wouldn't allow us to go. They didn't get any tickets. But a few of my mates went, actually. It was an interesting few days that they had out there with the Hungarian racists, like, you know. And I don't like tarring everyone with a large brush, but they do have quite a lot of racists wearing black shirts behind the goal. So yeah, I'm actually quite glad I didn't go to Hungary in the end. And then
probably the right call.
What's that? Yeah. And also England played on Sunday, so I went to I actually had a double bubble football weekend. I actually went non-league. I went to Wingate and Finchley on Saturday afternoon, which was actually quite pleasant. It's actually quite very Brentford, where I went to the game, and just as I walked through the turnstile, like the literally goal went in the back of the net, so I kind of missed that. And we went through the whole game, me and my daughter going, "Oh, that's all right," from Wingate, chatted to the owner and everyone like that, talking about, you know, Wingate. You know, I said, "That's not bad, you're in the hat," and he kept on moaning. He's going, "Bloody, I'm going to give him a right rollicking, this, that and the other," and I was going, "But you're in the hat, you're fine." And it literally wasn't until I looked on the phone to this morning and I saw the FA Cup replays today and Wingate are in it, and they actually drew 1-1. I left the match thinking that they'd actually won, so I thought that's quite typical old school Brentford, because that used to happen quite a lot in the days, you know, so which is all good.
But yeah, the days before we had the old school ball.
that's right. I'll tell you something as well, because obviously, I mean, I went to non-league games, but there were also games happening in the lower leagues, and we also had a Bees player who was playing in Division 1, Aaron Presley, and he scored another couple of goals, a brace for AFC Wimbledon in their 5-3 win over Pompey, and apparently the atmosphere was fantastic, really good atmosphere, and he was very good, and everyone's going, "Listen, Aaron Presley, I think they're tipping their hat to him," so I might have to talk to a few AFC Wimbledon fans to actually get a bird's eye view of how Presley's doing, because it offers us a little bit of an alternative there, doesn't it, Laney, if he starts to become match ready?
Yeah, it's a step up from the B team. He's done well at the B team level. There's obviously clearly no route into a Premiership Brentford team for him at the moment, and a decent loan spell with not so much guaranteed minutes, but almost guaranteed minutes in the lower leagues is exactly what he needs on his development. It's a big ask now to come straight out of the B team into a Brentford, Premiership survival scrap, which it isn't. And we're looking for international standard players, not sort of B team players at the moment. But there's no reason that he can't go there and then come back and then be bench ready. So I hope he sees his opportunity. It's a great club. Marcus Force had a really good time there. Mads Beck Sorensen had a really good time there. So it's a very good local route for Brentford players to get experience.
Yeah, talk about, set yourself up as a hero as well. I mean, one of our crew, Jay, who sits in the North Stand, he was telling us about how he went to the Forest Green game. And as you know, there's all sorts of fans from all over the place come from that game that can get a ticket and want to check out a stadium. And he said behind him was this absolutely rabid Marcus Force fan. He was a Wimbledon fan and he just turned up to see Marcus Force and he wouldn't stop going on about Marcus Force. He was singing, shouting, jumping up and down. And when he scored, this guy was literally on his seat, jumping, just going absolutely potty. So it just goes to show you how we send these players to other climes and people actually start to really adore them. But anyway, listen, we're playing Brighton on Saturday and there's a good opportunity for some people to know their history, because if you know your history, as you say, there's a museum that's opening down in Brentford, isn't it, Lainey?
Yep, there's a Brentford, well, it's a Fans Memories of Griffin Park museum exhibition that's part of the Brentford Steam Museum. And it's open every day between 10 and 4, I believe. But on Brentford home match days, season ticket holders get in for a fiver. So the incentive is to get to the Steam Museum nice and early, get round and see the Brentford Man Cave, and the Fan Cave, and there's lots of photographs, lots of artifacts, lots of really good memories of Griffin Park and the Brentford fan involvement in the football club. I didn't get a chance to go before the Arsenal match, which was the opening, because there was just so much going on. So I think I will go down there before the match on Saturday, nice and early, as I say. And I just encourage as many Brentford fans to do that as is possible, because there's a lot of hard work gone into that by Bees United, and the club have backed it. A lot of people have donated or loans, memorabilia or collections. There's Savs, Digital Works, Push Up Brentford documentary is shown constantly. You can sit and watch that. It's just a really positive, nice, wallowing in nostalgia. And then obviously you can go and have a beer, go and get some lunch, and go and see new Brentford play. It's a really good exhibition. And as I said, as many Brentford fans to take advantage of it this season as is possible.
Okay, that sounds great. And listen, also, we've got, like I said, that's at the Steam Museum, which is literally a stone's throw from the new stadium as you start walking down the high street towards Griffin Park, as it is. It's just on the corner there, so definitely check that out. JP, I know that there was a few problems at the Forest Green game with people getting in. Saturday's going to be interesting because they're putting a few new checks in on Saturday to ensure that, well, for a start, they want people to be safe when they're going into the ground. But also, this probably could be sort of controversial, because I know not everyone's going to be overly giving thumbs up to the checks that they're putting in, but it just depends on which side of the fence you sit on. Isn't that right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're coming in with the COVID checks. They did say they're not...
COVID passports,
yeah, exactly. Well, they have said they're not going to be turning people away. And this is more or less like a dummy run for what's going to be coming in the future. So people are going to have to prove that they've been jabbed, or they may have to take a test or prove that they're taking a test within the last 48 hours. So there's a lot of things going on, and I know that not everybody subscribes to what they're doing in order to keep people safe. But if you're going to want to go to Brentford in the future, you might have to play ball.
So that's quite interesting. And the thing is, I think for us, we're thinking about the queuing system, because that shocked me when we came for the Forest Green game, which is, inverted commas, just Forest Green, with all due respect to Forest Green. I'm not disrespecting them at all. I'm just saying, we, you know, when we used to play teams like Forest Green, when we were similar to Forest Green back in the day, we'd get 2,000 fans. But, you know, to get like 10, 11,000 fans for Forest Green was like, whoa, what's going on here? So the queues around the block did amaze us. So I think the fear for a lot of fans is that there's going to be queuing around the blocks, isn't it, Laney?
Yeah, I think they need to test the turnstiles as much as they do the people going through them. You know, it's both in my opinion are important, but you know, the technology did let us down a little bit on that Forest Green Rovers game. I hope in the 2 weeks that have transpired since then, they've got the IT and the ticketing system people in there, and they've properly tested that, because if that happens again on a capacity day, it's going to be carnage.
Yeah, and the word on the street is actually, well, the word on the street is that, you know, what the official word is, that, you know, it's got to do with the IP, and it's got to do with the ticket information in the cloud and certain turnstiles. Apparently the IP of those turnstiles, it didn't marry with the tickets in the crowd. So the information that was in the sky somewhere in the cloud, it couldn't get back down to the turnstiles, and that's why certain turnstiles weren't operating. GP?
I'm hoping that more the operational issues have been ironed out, because when I went to the Arsenal game, there was a massive queue for the turnstiles, with two turnstiles to the side, which were empty and nobody being directed there. Again, when I was queuing it, you know, nobody really knew, because the first time a lot of people had been there, they didn't really know where to queue and where to go for a lot of things, which did slow things down.
Yeah. Again, and I've been chatting with the club about these things, and they're aware of these things, and they understand that there are certain areas that people didn't know, and they do know. It's very early days, so they're going to sort that out. One other thing that I actually wanted to just get in before we have a little break, we go off, have a couple of drinks, and then come back again. Safe standing. I think that we might be seeing safe standing at Brentford a lot sooner than everyone thinks, and it's got to do with the fact that we're all standing, and the fact that we're standing. I think that everyone's realised that it's actually probably better for you to be safe standing than not to be all over the place, or standing in seats that are there. So I think that we might be seeing safe standing going in at Brentford a lot sooner than we can think. Like I said, you've heard it here on Besotted pretty much, I would say first, but you've heard it here on Besotted, where we're saying that there are definitely things going on in place, because it's ridiculous where people have to stand up when they're in seats, and we are standing up, and it's happening at Liverpool, it's happening at other places, and that I think they've started to realise it's much safer for you to be standing in a safe standing environment than anywhere else. So I think it's all been priced up and it's all looking hunky-dory, and I think within the next 12 months or even less than that, there will be safe standing at Griffin Park. But anyway,
I reckon within the month, Bill, we'll have sampled safe standing, don't you?
That's right.
West Ham away.
That's right. So listen, anyway, we're going to have a little break. We're going to have a drink. We're going to come back and we're going to talk some more football. So, tell you what, it's a couple of weeks ago, but we were up at Villa. Great weekend. We've talked about it. You could check it on the weekend recap podcast that we do as well. Pride of West. London. We talked about that game, actually. We recapped it all, and we were very, very happy with how we played. And the Villa fans were very complimentary about how we played. You might not have heard how the fans were and how the Villa fans were. And the Beast fans, let's just tell you something, because it was so long ago. Thought I'd give you a little bit of a recap. You can go back to those terraces straight after the game and back to the pub after the game. You can hear what the fans thought about what we were like after Villa.
Yeah, good result, good team performance. I don't think anyone had a bad game. Several players had an above average game. Can't knock anyone at all. Great for Tony to get a goal. Really happy with the performance.
We're definitely having that. I think we matched them man to man. Fantastic performance, really good. We had a couple of good golden opportunities. I'm thought to win the game, but unfortunately we didn't. But Raya was the man at the back as well.
I thought Ings looked dangerous, much better than anything Arsenal had up top against us, and I thought we defended brilliantly today, and You know, Henry should have got the goal just before half time. Difficult to ask a left back who doesn't score goals to score goals, but that one was presented. I just thought this was a much better test of what we're going to be up against in this league. And I thought it was a really solid performance. And I'm disappointed we didn't get the win, but I enjoyed it as a day out. I feel more confident after this week than last week that we're going to have what it takes to stay in this division.
Well, Ollie Watkins is a delight. It was great to see him kind of back on the pitch. Buendia, he needs to settle in, and he'll be a quality player. He needs to get back up to fitness. It was a nice test for everybody. Your fans did everybody proud. They're loud and proud, louder than Newcastle. So you did. It was great. You were a great credit.
Well, to be fair, I think you were the better side. Thought you'd come, played a good game plan. But I thought midfield, you beat us in midfield. I think if we had a couple of other players back, McGinn, Mings, it may have made us stronger, may have made a difference to the game. But on the whole, I thought you did really well, and I wish you the best for the rest of the season. I think from what I've seen, you've got the ability to stay up. It is difficult, and you will have a rocky road along the way. But I think you guys, you'll be fine. You'll be in the Premier League next year.
I think you boys did well. We said on the train up, so we're Villa fans, but we live in London, and we said we were sitting with some Bees fans on the way out, and we said actually a draw against your lot would be a good result, and I think a point each was a fair result. I think definitely a fair result, and yeah, you're absolutely right in what you say there. I think it was a good atmosphere, both sets of fans. We've all had a good time. Sun's out. It was. It felt good to be back today, right?
It's been a brilliant day. It's always good coming up to Aston Villa. The fans are friendly. The pub we use, the Barton Arms, is brilliant. And we don't lose up here. So it was a really positive day. Bit too hot, Bill. Sunshine.
It was very hot, wasn't it? Oh my word!
But yeah, I thought the Bees going into the transfer window, the international break, unbeaten. We'd have taken that literally all day long. It's brilliant. You know, 5 points on the board, and you know we scored another goal today. Ivan Toney's off the mark in the Premier League. That was brilliant to see. Yeah, it's all good.
I mean, I wasn't sure what would happen when we came up, but we kind of figured we're going to come to all the away matches, make the most of it in case we're not here for very long. But I'm taking all that back now. I think we might be here for a little while longer.
You Bees.
You Bees.
So that's it. It actually brings back quite a few memories. And tell you something, I know we talked about the takeaways. I mean, what was your main takeaway from that Villa game, GP?
My main takeaway was that we competed very well. And I've kind of set up, there's a two-tier Premiership. And we've got to be realistic and see that we're in the second tier. And the two teams we played, that result made me think, did we miss a trick? Have we missed a chance at Crystal Palace to take 3 points?
Okay, so you're thinking that, but what's your conclusion?
Well, my conclusion is that I'm a lot more confident in our ability to stay up after seeing that game than I was at the beginning of the season. We've settled down really well. The important thing is we've got to get points on the board early, like Sheffield United did last year.
So, Bill, you said you were left thinking, will we miss dropping 2 points against Palace? You didn't answer what your conclusion was. Are you ruined that we dropped 2 points or not?
Yeah, I am very. I do think that Crystal Palace, it did make me think Villa were a better side than Crystal Palace, and we competed with them, with relative ease, other than the goal when two of our players got a little bit of a mix up and left a little bit more space. About the only real chance that they had to score, they had a couple of half chances when Watkins came on at the end, but we dealt with them very easily. And again, we don't look like we're letting in a lot of goals.
I think you're being a little bit hard on yourself there as well, because although we didn't get maximum points at Palace, it was our first away game. And I think, it was important that we need to feel our way into this season. We had the euphoria against Arsenal, and it was I think it was vital that we didn't go there and just undo all of that positives. We didn't do that. Okay, I mean, you're right. Yeah, in 6 months' time, we might be thinking, oh, we could have done even better there. But at the time, I think it's literally go there, tippy-tap into it. I know we didn't. We, you know, we went toe-to-toe with a very physical team. But I think it was about coming away undefeated still. And then that gives us the injection to go to Villa Park. And I think Villa Park was... you could argue that it was our first kind of proper game in the Prem, because, you know, Arsenal was a crazy night, you know, full of emotion, full of, as I said, you know, that kind of like real deep emotional hairs on arms. It was a soul searching evening where you were proud of the past and you were kind of expectant of the future. It was a random night, I'd say, and it was an unforgettable night.
It was an event more than a game.
Yeah, and we had to get it out of the way, and we got it out of the way with 3 points. Villa, on the other hand, we went to a team that played, who arguably had a better team than us, a better squad than us. More experience, bigger names. We came away, and we could have won that game as well, I think. So yeah, I think it was a perfect end to those first three matches. We got to go again.
That's the interesting thing, because we could have nine. We played well enough to have 9 points out of nine.
Yeah, I mean, we could have ended up with zero. You know, as well.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I mean, I also spoke to a few Villa fans as well. I actually was chatting to one of the coaching staff at Wingate and Finchley, actually. I think one of the sort of the head coaches, and we were just chatting about, and he saw my Brentford badge on, all my Brentford badge down there, with Brentford top, and he went, "Oh, Brentford." He goes, "I said, you know," and I said, "Yeah, I go home and I wait." And he goes, he says, "Oh, I'm Villa." And I went, "You really?" I said, "I was at Villa last week." He goes, "So was I." And then he went to me, quite honest with you, you were unlucky not to get 3 points. And he was like, just being honest, you know. So I thought, oh, really? Like, you know, so I think that, you know, sometimes we're quite happy. We're so happy to get the point because we want to kind of get survival. It kind of reminds me of our first season in the Championship, where I remember, I mean, I said, listen, if we can finish, what is it, 20th, you know, or 21st or whatever the position is, 20th, I think it is, I'm going to be absolutely delighted, or 19th, I can't remember, you know, I'm going to be delighted if we can finish 19th, like, you know, and we end up bloody making the playoffs, and we're like, whoa, where's this all about? So I think we're in that kind of mode at the moment now. We're happy to be there, and whatever result that comes, as long as we get a point here or there, we're happy with it. But other people are seeing things in a different light to how we're seeing things. So, I mean, looking at the next four games, we've got Brighton, Wolves, Liverpool and West Ham. Without honing down on necessarily single games at all, but I'm just thinking overall, what you're thinking about, because this is the next stage of our lives in the Premier League. You know, we've got four matches till the next international break. You can argue to say they're a much more difficult set of matches than the previous set of matches. But we've also come in here and we kind of know what this is about to a certain extent. So what do you reckon?
Personally, I'd go same again. You know, if we can get five, if we can get 6 points out of those four games, I'd be delighted. Five, I'd be really happy with. We are going to taste defeat. You know, we're not going to go unbeaten all season. We could do. We could, well, you know, we could do, because we'd just not, Gary. That's why. You know, Arsenal are the last team to be invincibles, weren't they? I don't think we're quite at that level.
Everyone was saying they couldn't do it.
But I'm back in the real world. We're not going to go unbeaten all season. Ten points after the first two phases, and then qualifying through to the next round of the Carabao Cup, I think it's pretty good. But six points would be good if we could win. If we can win, you know, one away and one of the home games. Brighton looks more likely than Liverpool, but hey, anything's possible. I agree. Anything's possible.
You never know.
In individual matches. So yeah, I'd put my hand up and say I'd be happy with five right now.
I mean, we're going to talk about Brighton a little bit later. I mean, I've said this before, that I thought it's going to be one of the more difficult matches. I thought Villa would be one of our more difficult matches, which it has been so far. And I thought Brighton's also going to be one of our more difficult matches, because they're another Championship team as far as I'm concerned. And this is with all due respect to Brighton. It's just that you came from the Championship like we did, so you probably know more about us than most other teams do. You know how to beat us now, to play us, as opposed to Arsenal, who kind of just came and just, well, I don't know if they did any research. research at all, but they obviously, if they did, they didn't really do it very well. So I'm a little bit more worried about Bright, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But interestingly, Wolves, I was talking to I was talking to a Man United fan who actually went up to Wolves last week and they played them. And I know Man United beat them, but he said actually Wolves were really good and actually they were all over Man United and they should have won that game. It's just that they couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. Is it Traore missed a few sitters, really? So I think we need to be aware that, you know, we are coming up against a sort of a quite a difficult tranche, quite a difficult set of games here.
Haven't Wolves got the highest XG in the league? With the fewest points, I think they are the, I think they've created the best chances of any clubs, but have got the fewest points. So hopefully that continues.
We need to get Will the spreadsheet winker on this one, actually, with his calculator and his machines and his whirring noises, and he'll actually probably come out with that, you know. So and interestingly, because what I've noticed is as well, like I said, you're looking at how the teams are. It's teams that were, you know, in the Championship, you know, Leeds United, which were, you know, again, I know some people hate XG, but again, I think it's a really good indicator. And Leeds were like, you know, knocking out sort of 2.5, threes, 3.5, sometimes even fours, which means they're creating a load of wicked chances. And I was just having a glance at Leeds the other day and I was looking at them sort of kind of scraping ones and one and a bit. So it goes to show you how the chances that you're getting in this division are fewer and far between if your teams like us. I mean, Everton, teams like Everton are doing really, really well at the moment now, and they're giving teams a little bit of a run around, as Brighton fans will tell you. But, you know, in general for us, it's really hard for us to kind of to get these chances. So when we do get them, and I know it sounds like we're like a broken record, we do need to put them in the back of the net. I mean, I know you talked about, I mean, Laney, you said that you're talking about 6 points, 5 points. GP, the next four games, where do you see us, or where would you like to see us going points wise?
Again, well, I'd like to see I'd like to see eight. I realise I'm being ridiculously optimistic on that one. But yeah, I mean, I think if we can get five, I'd be satisfied with that. Three, I'd be a bit worried. I think generally this game that's coming up on Saturday, we need to be winning it. We might have had a bit of, you know, we might have something in the bank if we'd managed to win a couple of, you know, if we managed to win one of the previous two. But I think we need to really look at winning this, because West Ham is tough. But then again, you know, you might get something at West Ham. It depends. They can be, you know, they can be a bit flaky at home. Wolves, again, you can get, you know, no reason why we can't pick up something. Liverpool's going to be another event like Arsenal. So, again, you know, it's a new thing for Liverpool. Anything could happen. No reason we can't get anything out of that game other than them being very good at football. But other than that, you know, eight would be great. I think realistically we're looking at four or five.
How about you, Mr. Grant? Come on, give us your insights into this.
No, well, I mean, just, I think, interestingly, I made a point, you know, and I made a point on sort of our little communication ring, as you say it, with characters. And I said, you know, I think Brighton is a must-win game. And it's not because we must win it. It's just because I believe that, you know, the way they work it in the club, they look at the games which they think, OK, this one is a win, this one is a draw, this one is a lose. So if we draw a game that we've put down to lose, that means we're ahead of our target. And I think, you know, when they look at it, when you look at the fact that it's at home, the fact it's against Brighton, and this is not saying that we're going to beat Brighton, but I think if you look at the whole, you know, trajectory, and you look at the games we've got coming up, we've got Burnley away, which is going to be a really tough game. They're going to just beat us, and they're going to be lobbing the ball in the air, and it's going to be really hard, and they're going to be going really defensive. So that's going to be a hard point. We've got quite a hard October. So I think that, you know, I'm saying that this game is a must-win game. If we don't win it, it's not a disaster at all. But I think this is down as a win game, a must win game for us, so that if we get it, we're kind of almost like on target or ahead of the game. In fact, at the moment now, we are ahead of the game, because I don't think that they would have been put down as a win against Arsenal. I think at the very most, they would have put us down as a draw against Arsenal, you know, maybe a loss, you know, and against Villa.
I think I'd have us down for a win.
Well, I'm talking about, you know, the coaching staff and everything like that, who actually have to set their barriers and see where they're going to go. And I think that Arsenal would have been a team where we wouldn't have said, you know, let's go in for a win here. Let's put them down maybe as a draw, or maybe let's put it down as loss. So the fact that we've got a win against them, it's we're already 3 points ahead of where we should be. You know, Aston Villa, Crystal Palace, I think probably would have been put down as a draw, even though as the game panned out, I think they're probably a bit gutted because they thought actually we could have got a win there. So we could have been 2 points ahead of where we thought we would be. So all of a sudden, we would have been 5 points ahead of where we thought we might have been. And then, you know, then you got the Aston Villa game, which probably was put down as a draw. And I think they were probably happy with that. So, you know, if you're doing that because you're looking ahead at your Liverpools, your West Hams, your Chelseas, like, you know, which are coming up, which are going to probably on paper going to be a little bit more difficult to get your points. For me, I'm looking at this Brighton game saying it's a must-win game only because it's like it kind of keeps you in that game of not trying to flip in, trying to be getting points against Manchester City and Everton and you know,
but we're,
and
let's Liverpool just focus on Chelsea. Focus on these four, Bill. So, yeah.
So I'm doing that. So, for me, like I said to you, Brighton's a must-win. And for me, I'm thinking that 1, 2, 3, 4... If we got 5 points out of these, I think we'd be doing, all right. I know a lot of people might be disappointed, but I think if we get 3 points, five out of these games, I think if we got 7 or 8, I think we're, you know, we should be going, whoa, this is, you know, we're doing very well with ourselves. But I'm not being greedy. 5 points out of these four games, and I think we're chugging along quite nicely. Don't forget, and I said to you, I did the running down where I think Sheffield United last season took until the 18th of January to get to the same points total as we are on right now, right? Okay, so that's I think it's like so 18 games in, and I think it took West Brom 9 games and Fulham 7 games or something like that to get the same points we're on now after 3 games. So what I'm trying to say is that let's just be sensible about it and let's go forward at a nice pace so I'm not getting too greedy. So anyway, listen.
No, 100%, yeah, agree.
No, it's all good. So listen, talking about getting greedy, I'm greedy for a bit of music, a bit of funk, because we got JB in the house. We haven't seen or heard from JB for a while, but he's going to be giving us some musical delights, some statistical delights, some facts and some funk. JB, come and sock it to us, JB.
Take it away, boy.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. Looking back to the Villa game, and the crowd was 42,045. That was our 22nd highest crowd we've ever played in front of for a league game. The last time we had more was the 55,000 at Newcastle in 2016, and prior to that it back to 1952 at Sheffield Wednesday. The game was also Thomas Frank's 150th game in charge, if you exclude that unplayed Bolton game from 2019, and it takes him to 14th place in the club's long-serving manager list. On Saturday, we'll be a month into the season with only 3 league games played. And we're going to have to be patient this season, as we only have 38 league games, plus perhaps a handful of cup games. Compared to last season when we played 57 in 39 weeks, averaging a game every 5 days. And certainly there'll be no playoffs this year. Now we turn to Brighton. Although we've never played them in the top tier, we have crossed paths with them many times in the last 100 years. In fact, across all competitions during that period, including the war seasons, we have a quirky set of results against them. We've had games in which we have scored none, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and 9 against them.
So there you go, JB, with his facts and his funk. And JB, that Villa game, and I didn't even think about it like that because it was pretty amazing, actually. You know, when you look at that stadium when it is full like that, 42,000 people in that stadium. Because when we were there before, we've never played in front of a crowd that big at Villa. I mean, I've been there in the semi-final and the crowd was against West Brom and the crowd was 42,000 as well. And I stood in the whole end. Well, I stood in every end, actually. I was quite lucky to basically got passed to go anywhere in the stadium. It was quite a laugh. But I stood in the whole end. I was like, oh, this is quite impressive. But it was quite amazing to be in that stadium with 42,000 people in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was lovely, and we had more at that game than the Villa had at the previous match against Newcastle at home. So, and you know, one of my Villa chums. Funny enough, I spent the Wednesday night after that game up at Villa Park with the Berkshire and Berkshire Aston Villa Supporters Club. They were doing an evening with Gary Shaw and Tony Morley, who won the European Cup with Villa in 1982, and I'm doing a book at the moment about that European Cup win. So it was an interesting evening spending it with them. They were really not happy with Ivan Toney, but I digress. I'll carry on with the game. They said we were a really good football team, and we're gonna do well this season. So it was really interesting to hear the opponent's views. Going back to what's coming up next, it's just Brighton and no mugs. You know, we can't be, I don't think, taking too much for granted there. You know, my Watford friends have said that, you know, they scared the bejesus out of them a couple of weeks ago.
You impressed with that?
So I was very impressed with it. Oh yeah, so I was absolutely impressed with it. I mean, the one thing I did like is that we weren't 3,000 feet up in the air like we were in that Newcastle game like a couple of years ago. But yeah, I mean, you're right, that, you know, the whole atmosphere, and again, it was, you know, New Brentford, we turn up at these big places and we actually perform rather than getting turned, you know, we're not there for a jolly and a day out, we're there to compete with them.
That's good. So listen, to so talking about competing, we've got to compete on Saturday because we've got Brighton coming down. Brighton are one of the teams that we've played a lot in the past. We've played them so many, we've played them everywhere, we've played them all over the place. We're going to take a break, we're going to have a drink, we're going to come back and we're going to chat Brighton. So Brighton on Saturday at New Griffin Park, and we played Brighton, when did we play Brighton? God, a few years ago actually. They were quite good actually the last time that we played them, but they've been doing bigger things since they've left us actually. You know, they've gone up to the Premier League and they know all about the Premier League and they've been playing and they survive in the Premier League as well. So we need to get a little bit more info about Brighton. So we've gone to Graham from the Brighton Rock podcast and he's giving us the lowdown on Brighton.
Hello to all Bees fans. My name is Russell Guyver. I'm a Brighton and Hove Albion fan podcaster. I run the Brighton Rock podcast, which I co-host with my mate Peter. We've been doing it since January of last year. Basically, it's the usual stuff, previews, reviews of matches, general football information and chat. We also get ex-players on sometimes, and we've had copious numbers of Albion fans on from time to time talking about their own backstories. That's the general remit for the pod. In terms of the Albion, well, we've been in the Premier League now for 4 years. This is our fifth year. It's great to see that Brentford have followed us up, and you are a very welcome addition to the division, I must say. Really gutted for you when you missed out last year, so superb you're in this time round. In terms of what to expect from the Premier League, well, you've got off to a flying start. Brilliant to see you get the win against Arsenal. From an all-neutrals point of view, that's always great. What the Prem does with the fixture calendar is they'll tend to give you a good premium game at the beginning. We had that. We had Man City. It was fascinating to come up against a team of such amazing quality. It's what we wanted when we got up into the Prem. That was the main focus. Get up and play the very best and see your players that you've been cheering on through the divisions and all those times, to finally see them come up against the absolute best in football is superb. And that's what there is to look forward to with the Premier League, isn't there? I mean, we lost 2-0 to City. We held them for 70 minutes in that first season. And then just two mistakes, two goals, bish-bosh. That's just how good it is. That's the main thing you're going to have to look out for in the Premier League. There are teams who will, if you allow them, and sometimes even if you don't allow them, will be able to pass you off the pitch. Very quick, very incisive passing like you've never seen before live. It's like that sometimes. That's the main thing to worry about. But if you go into it with the right attitude, if you play your game, listen to the tactics of the manager and play the right game, and play your own game is the main thing, and play it with gusto, you can get results. You won't get too many results against the big boys. It's great you've already got one against Arsenal. There will be times during the season where you may lose 3, 4, 5, even 6 games in a row. Do not fret if that happens. That's what I would say. That would be my advice, because it's that kind of a division. It's merciless. You don't get the decisions the big clubs do. VAR, they're modifying it now. But the one thing we know for sure is they're still going to give you very little. The luck and the decisions don't even themselves out. It's absolute rubbish. I've done my own little mini survey on it. We're in deficit by about anywhere between 10 and 12 decisions last season alone. That just gives you an idea of what you're up against. Not just the best teams, but biased refereeing, or so it seems at least. So those are the main things really to take into account. As far as the division goes, it's an interesting one. It's going to be anyone's game really. Every match is up for grabs. What you've got to do is you've got to sharpen up your game management as much as possible. You've got to make the very best out of every situation you get over this season. And if you can do that, then I believe you can survive and you can thrive in the division. I'm predicting Brentford to survive. I'm going to go for 14th or 15th, actually. I think you can do as well as that, which is a great start, to be honest, in the first division, first season up. I'm hoping and thinking that Brighton will survive as well, and I think we'll finish somewhere similar. The reason I don't think we can do better than that is because the one issue that we've had season on season is getting enough striking options in. We've had a shortfall in that department all the way through the Premier League era. Neil Morpay's great, of course, a player you know very well. But the problem we have got is we haven't got enough in depth. We got Danny Welbeck at the end of the window as a free agent last summer, and that was a good bit of business. But he's obviously got some injury issues he'll have. He can't play every game. We are missing another striker, and that's the main drawback, the main disappointment we've had from the summer. We've made some good signings. We've got in a really good player in Enoch Mwepu, who's a Zambian international. He's a box-to-box midfielder. We've already got Bissouma, who's brilliant in that role, and more so as a defensive midfielder, but he can play anywhere, Bissouma in the middle. But what you've got with Mwepu is someone who's probably better at doing the one thing that Bissouma lacks at the moment, which is to score enough goals from midfield. That might be an interesting element. We might see him play at the weekend. Bissouma you definitely will see, and he's the one to watch, of course. But in terms of summer business, we've got Mwepo, who's called the computer because of his reading of the game. He's going to be interesting. We got him in nice and early, much later in the window on deadline day, I think it was. We got in Marc Cucurella, who is a Barcelona B and La Masia graduate. He's made his name elsewhere. He was playing for Getafe, and we've signed him. He's a long-term target through the summer. We've signed him. He's a left-back, left-wing-back. It's a position we've needed to fill, and we've needed some more pace in the team. So I'm pleased with those bits of business. We've done some other stuff for developmental and for the future. Simmer, who we've signed, who's come in and gone straight out on loan to Stoke. But I'm mainly disappointed with the striker business. That's been where we've lacked. What to look out for the weekend? We're playing you guys, of course. It's going to complete an interesting stat, by the way. It's going to mean that we've played you guys in every domestic English competition going when we line up against each other at the weekend. It's the only thing we haven't done is met in the top flight. We've both been there before. We've never been there at the same time. So that's going to be great. That's going to be a great occasion. And let's hope it's a great game. I'm predicting in the game, from my point of view, what I would call an optimistic 1-1 or 2-2 draw in this match. I think there'll be goals. I think there'll be entertainment. I'm not confident we can get the 3 points, and I am worried you could. So it is a possibility. But I'm going to go with the score draw. What you guys have got to look out for really is in terms of, it's a really good team we've got. We play possession football. We generally pass it out from the back, but we have our ways of trying to negate teams that play the high press. So you've got to watch out for our ability to play long diags. Dunk and Webster are both very good at that. Our centre-backs, those two guys, along with Ben White last season, and a resurgent Shane Duffy after a poor spell at his childhood supporting club of Celtic last season. He's come back in the fold. He's doing well, and he provides aerial presence in both boxes. But Dunk and Webster are the key players. They're ball-playing centre-backs. They can play long diags. Webster is a man who can make driving runs and can make stuff happen further up the field. Dunk is our stalwart, our solid captain guy. He's your last ditch blocks and challenges man. Those are the key attributes to our centre-back situation. But behind them, where we've improved is Matty Ryan was a good goalkeeper for us. He joined us at the beginning of our Premier League campaign. 3 years he was the top man. In the fourth year, Robert Sanchez broke into the team ahead of him. I don't think Matty Ryan was too happy. He's moved on because he wants first-team football. But Robert Sanchez has provided, by replacing him, the one element that we were missing, which allowed us to play football without Duffy, actually, when he was out last season. Robert Sanchez dominates the box. He's become a Spanish international. He came through our graduate system, but he's just made his debut for the senior team. He was in the Euros with Spain as well, unplayed. He is a very big big player. Pantera, they call him the Panther. Well, I called him that actually first, and I think others have joined in. He can really claim in the box. He's dominant. He's an aerial presence. He's good with his distribution. He's good with his talking. He's probably a captain of the future. He's one to watch. Cucurella, the new signing as the left wing back, looks like a really good player. We've got Solly March, another homegrown boy who does well. He's a converted winger who now plays wing back. He's very good there. The other side, of course, Lamptey is the great player for us, but he's been out on a long-term injury, hamstring injury. We have got Veltman, who's coming back into the team after COVID. He should be back up to scratch now, and he will probably play at wing-back. And it's our defence we're most proud of. I think that's where our strength lies. We got a lot of clean sheets last season. Nobody really thrashed us last year. The worst we had was a 3-0 with Leicester. So keep that in mind. It will be difficult to beat us, but it's doable. Midfield, I've mentioned Bissouma, he's a world-class player, he's so, so good. I'm just enjoying every minute that we've still got him, because it won't be forever. In the meantime, you've got Mwepo, who might play a part. You've got Pascal Gross. Beware the Pascal pirouette. He does a slow-motion Cruyff turn, which seems to fool players game after game after game. I don't know how he does it. Look out for that if he's playing, and he probably will. His assist rates, his crossing, his corners, he's the main man. His stats are very good on that. He's good for your old fantasy football, actually. Trossard, he blows hot and cold, Belgian international. He's predominantly a wide attacker. He can play as a 10. I think he's better wide. He can blow hot and cold, but if he's on form, he can be a telling difference in games. One of the most magnificent moments in the last few seasons was last season when fans were allowed back in right at the end of the season. The last two sets of games, so each set of fans had one home match to go to. Ours was Man City, you might have seen it. We went 2-0 down, we came back to win 3-2. Trossard was amongst the stars in that match, and we came back to win 3-2. We finally cracked City, which was the biggest nemesis of us in the 4 years we've been in the Prem so far. So that's one to look out for. Trossard could be interesting. Welbeck, of course, could play a part. And, of course, we all know about Neil Maupay. Le Petit, you know what house. He's a wind-up merchant, of course. Billy, chatting to him during midweek, was telling us about his antics versus Leeds. He even did it last season for us against an empty stadium. And you might have him up to some antics against his old boys. Who knows? Either way round, I mean, I know you guys love him. We love him as well. He scored 10 goals in his first season, 8 in his second, which was a bit of a disappointment. I think he lost some confidence for a while. But he's already come back strong this year. 2 goals in the first 2 games. Didn't get much service against Everton. All of those 20 goals, they've all come in the Premier League. So he's notching up a decent number. There's a lot more to come from him. We love him, but we know he can develop more. He is playing with more confidence. And I would suspect he might score against you guys. It's one of those things, isn't it? But I hope it's going to be an entertaining game. I'm really looking forward to the game. I've got the tickets. I'm going to meet up with a load of mates. We're going to one of the pubs near the ground. Hopefully meet up with a load of Brentford fans, because they're always welcoming. They're always top dollar. Absolutely love the Brentford supporters. One of my favourite away days in London is going to your grounds. Looking forward to the new one, speaking of which. Love Griffin Park in the old days. Looking forward to the new Griffin and to a good game of football. Also, I've got to just mention the Saka applause in that first game against Arsenal and the match in general. Absolutely top class the way he gave Saka a reception when he came on the pitch for the opposition. That is the mark of you guys as supporters. I know not everyone's a nice person at any club, but the majority of you guys, absolutely exemplary behaviour. And what an atmosphere. I'm looking forward to a similar atmosphere when we come to town. We do make a bit of noise. You obviously do as well from what we saw. So that's all stuff to look forward to. And I think that pretty much sums it up. So I'm going to go, as I said, for a 1-1 or a 2-2 draw. And we're going to try and dominate the game in terms of passing. Our XG was, along with the signings of strikers and awful decisions, against us last season were the big disappointments. If we can continue our creating our XG, I think it's only a matter of probability that we'll score more goals. We've started well. Can we carry on? Let's find out. So looking forward to the game. Up the Bees and up the Albion.
So there you go, Graham from the Brighton Rock podcast. And I guess in on his podcast as well, he actually came down the road to the Boozer down the road. We sipped a few real ales and we just chatted about Brentford and Brighton and lots of other stuff as well. You should check it out on his Brighton Rock podcast. But thanks for that, Graham. And that was a very interesting insight on Brighton. But I'll tell you something. He's given us his insight. But I thought, tell you, it's not only his insight, because we, both of our teams are statistical teams. You know, they've got Tony Bloom, who used to be in partnership with Matthew Benham, and they do the same thing. You know, they've got the statistical models going on. The thing about it is that Brighton didn't put it in a press release and tell the world, so no one actually really knows about it, but they do exactly the same thing that we do. So we thought we're going to wheel in Will, the spreadsheet winker, to give us a bit of a statistical rundown on Brighton, and he might even have a look back at the Villa game as well. Will, what are you saying?
Spreadsheet winker, he's a winker, winker, and it does seem good like a pretty well should be. Spreadsheet winker, he's a winker, and he's always putting his
blood. So, what are the two main things that we can expect in our second home game this season? First, Brighton will likely create lots of big chances. They ended up with more than 1.5 XG in 2 out of 3 games so far this season. The question is really whether or not they will actually convert those chances. They created on average 1.65 XG per match last season, but only actually scored an average of 1.05 goals, a massive underperformance indicative of strikers who are just not clinical enough. The main aim for the Bees defenders then will be to harass them as much as they possibly can. And as we've been so successful at doing so far, only Arsenal have created more than 1 XG against us so far this year, stop their strikers getting in good areas to score. Second of all, Brighton's most recent game against Everton was very interesting to look at. They created a lot less than average, 0.77 XG to Everton's 1.5, and the XG that they did make was from lots of tiny chances. So what was the change then? It should be said that Everton's main provider of XG was a penalty, at 0.8, but they still managed to keep Brighton's attackers quiet. They seemed to do this by sitting back and soaking up pressure, pressing a lot less than Brighton did, with more than double the average number of passes allowed per defensive action. Everton only had 35% possession, but their four defenders worked very hard, with 53 clearances of Brighton's 42, and winning 20% more aerial duels than Brighton did. If the Bees defenders can match the same intensity against Brighton, and we play with one more centre-back than Everton did, with players like Norgaard and Janelt who can screen the defence, then we'll do well to shut up Neil Mopay and company on Saturday.
So there you go, Will, the spreadsheet winker. And he's highlighted the thing that I'm a little bit nervous of about Brighton. I know that I said it's a must-win game, but I also know it's going to be very difficult. They've created over 1.5 XG, as he said, in the two games they've won. So they create some really, really good chances. Obviously, Everton they played, and Everton just, you know, they were just very good, and they just beat them hands down. But in the other two games, they've created some very, very good chances. They create great chances. They don't always put them in the back of the net. So that might be the kind of thing that maybe may let us off, or it might be the thing that kills us with Brighton. But we're going to have to be definitely on our guard. Listen, just to give you a little bit of a lowdown as to where Brighton stand here, they're good at attacking set pieces. They're strong at that. They're strong at shooting from direct free kicks. They're strong at attacking down the wings. You know, they create chances through individual skills, so they've got great skillful players. You know, they're good at coming back from losing positions, so even if we go ahead, we need to be on the ball. They're good at defending set pieces. They're good at protecting the lead. They're good at stealing the ball from the opposition. So that's where they're good at, and their weaknesses are stopping the opponents from creating chances as well, and defending against long shots. So overall, they're actually a good side. You know, they play short passes, they play mainly down Rico Henry's side, they love possession football and playing in their own half. So it's going to be a toughie, isn't it, Laney?
Yeah, it's going to be a real toughie. Fair play to Brighton. They're a couple of seasons at least ahead of us in their evolution. In Graham Potter, they've got an exceptional coach and an exceptional manager. They're shrewd. They're, as you say, they're out of a similar mould to us, but they got to the Prem and they've stayed in the Prem for longer. So we're playing catch up to them. They've struggled. They had a really good season, but they've been in that bottom half. And they flirted with relegation certainly last season. They seem better equipped this year. And I'm looking forward to seeing Morpay. He's another player that left us with our blessing as such, but you know, we left on good terms. And I know Morpay is used to shit housing, and I hope that he's got the manners not to try and do that against us. I don't think he will. I think he's another one that will tip his hat and he'll thank us for allowing him to progress and get to the Prem. Yeah, I'm looking for, as much as I, you know, I dreaded seeing Ollie Watkins, I'm kind of dreading seeing Morpay as well, but, you know, it will be good to see him too.
And GP, I mean, your thoughts, Brighton, I mean, you've seen their strengths and their weaknesses and what they're like. What's your thinking?
No, well, you know, to echo Dave's point, well, you know, you always sit there and you know, you've been wishing Morpay well, but I can see him doing a full heel turn on Saturday. I think we'll come out of there, you know, knowing how all those other teams felt to play against him. But, I mean, as you said before, I really do think this is a must win for us. We've got to get those points on the board early before we get into, because what happens, you get into the winter, people get injured, it just becomes a slog. And if you've got to fight for points in the middle of that slog, it's not the best. So for Saturday, to be honest, as from your description, you know, that they look like they're good going forward, but they don't, it's not as if they've scored a huge amount of goals, I don't think. So I don't really see them score. I don't really see them scoring many. We're going to have opportunities based on what you've just said. We're going to have opportunities. And this is one of those where people like Mbeumo and Tony, these are the games where they need to step up and put the ball in the goal.
Yeah. I mean, again, listen, I think we're both similar sides, you know, both create similar type of chances. It's just whoever takes the chances, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, the chances that they missed in the previous matches, they don't rack them up and all of a sudden they put them all in the back of the net when it comes to sort of kind of, you know, sample size and all this kind of stuff that the stats people say, you know, and they sort of kind of make the amends in this match. Like I said to you, they got players, like I said, Neil Maupay, you know, we've got Adam Lallana as well, who we've known from back in the day. Doesn't seem to have had actually a great season as well. Then we've got, you know, Lewis Dunk, who's always been a bit of an nemesis for us as well, the old Dunkster. Their goalkeeper Sanchez as well seems to have actually been someone who's been pulling a few things out of the hat for them. So he's actually been having a great season, for, you know, very much like, you know, for us as well, you know. So I don't know what else we can say. I mean, I'm going to go around the table here, and I think it's just easier for you to express how you think we're going to do by giving a score prediction, Laney.
We are due a defeat, but I don't think it's going to come on Saturday. It's up to the Brentford fans to create an incredible atmosphere at New Griffin Park. We need to get to the pubs early, have a couple of cold drinks, lubricate our vocal cords and absolutely make the stadium a fortress. The players can come out and do their stuff. We're going to win 3-1.
Oh, this was controversial. And talking about the pubs as well, if you check out besotted.com, Ian Westbrook does his guide every single home game as well. He's got the Brighton guide. He's just ready to go. He'll be out there live on Friday, and it's giving you the lowdown on Brighton. It's giving you all the podcasts, all the information as well, but also it's giving us and it's giving you all the pubs to go to. The pubs in the area, which are in the Cubridge area, in the Brentford area, and all the different areas. So go and check that out, besotted.com as well. GP, are you going to go as bonkers as Lady is and go for a 3-1 or something like that?
I'm not. My heart says we're going to win 2-1. I feel we're definitely going to go ahead in this game. However, I have a nice suspicion that Brighton are going to come from behind and snatch a point at the new place.
So you've gone for what you gone for?
So I'm going for 1-1.
So you're going for 1-1?
Yeah, okay, afraid so. I just have this nasty suspicion.
Right, okay. So he's gone for a draw, which is, you know, like I say, we're still edging away up there as well. And for me, I'm gonna go for it again, and I'm just gonna go and nudging for a 1-0. Bees win on this one as well. I'm just trying to say that, you know, we need to keep our head above the water for now. So that will do it for now and just take the pressure off a little bit. So I'm going for 1-0 Bees win, which is not bad. So listen, you know, still all positive. We've come up with a great one. We're getting some really good plaudits from people as well. All the people that I'm talking to, everyone, you know, more people know Brentford than they do 6 months ago. I could tell you that for much, because people are going to us, oh my God, I remember now you support Brentford and you've had a great start to the season, which is good. And I've always said, it's only 3 games in, you know, it's very early days. So I think we're keeping ourselves level-headed. But this has been a good little catch-up. Listen, first of all, I'm going to say, don't forget Ko-fi. Thanks very much to everybody who has supported us and helped us out. We are going through it and we are going to come back and we're going to just talk to you and come up with loads of stuff. We've been taking a little bit of a break the last few weeks because even though we've only had 3 games, it's been a bit full-on the first 3 weeks of being in the Premier League, it has to be said. But we say that we thank you all very much for your donations, just helping us out. Besotted.com/ beer. Thanks for helping us out on that one as well. Don't forget to subscribe to us on all good podcast channels. We're still trying to turn off the advertising. I put in another note in today, said please turn off the manscaping, but it hasn't quite happened as yet, but we're still working on that, because it's annoying us as well, and I'm sure it's annoying a lot of you as well, so we'll see about that. But other than that, like I said, we've got our t-shirts out there, you know, Brentford Premier League t-shirts. Go and check that out, besotted.com. But other than that, my name is Billy Grant. I've had a great evening here. I'm going to go and turn to the England game now. I didn't go to Poland, but a lot of my mates did go to Poland. They went to Hungary and they went over to Poland as well, so I'm going to check out to see how that game's going to get on. Hopefully they get back in one piece tomorrow when they come back. But listen, I've had a great evening. I'm very excited about the Brentford game on Saturday. We're going to play Brighton, and then we've got the lads in the house. Laney.
Yes, good evening.
And we've got GP.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, gentlemen. And I'll say good night myself, Billy Grant, as well. As we say, we're going to be excited. We've got Brighton in the house. Come and see someone. What do you say? Come on, you bees.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.